Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. Look, I could go into everything that's happening in the NBA, like LeBron James getting into a scuffle with Isaiah Stewart. Yeah, I'll go into that for a second, and then we'll get to what I think is a fabulous two-part interview. It could be a three-part interview. A fabulous interview with Joe Bunizar, who's like the godfather of the IMG basketball end of their academy, and then, of course, Impact Sports. And like, look, if you know anything about personal training, getting ready for the NBA draft or evolving NBA players, you know what Joe's name is. Wait to hear his background and some of the things he did as a student manager at the University of Indiana under Bob Knight that I think you'll find to be very, very interesting. In regards to the, I guess, quasi fight, like, look, I don't know why Isaiah Stewart lost his mind, but he lost his fucking mind. And you'll get this from people who didn't play basketball, really, is that, well, LeBron James hit him with his fist. Well, I don't know. It's pretty obvious what happened. They got caught kind of hand fighting, and the guy, Isaiah, grabbed his arm. And when he shook his arm free, like, you know, he's like, get off me. He happened to hit him in the face. So he got thrown out of the game. Now, the NBA will probably suspend him a game or whatever just to try and act like they're being fair. But the reality is he already got kicked out of a game. What was a close game that they could have lost? So I feel like it'd be double jeopardy to kick him out of another game. But this is where you, when you watch that video and you look even at LeBron's reaction afterwards, you start to realize that the only people who truly believe he did it on purpose are people that never played basketball before, which leads me to a word I'm going to give you to use for those people. They're called civilians. I like that. I like called civilians. That's me and my friend. Well, you can use that. People that don't know anything about what they're actually watching and they just say things and you have to kind of nod your head and smile, especially if you're a talented head assistant, NBA, G League, college, high school, junior college coaches listen to this. You know, the person that literally doesn't know anything about what they're talking about, those are civilians, right? Where you have a kind of a master class in what you're doing. All right. I want to get, so the net is like, I don't know why Isaiah Stewart lost his mind. Maybe it's because he got a little bit cut up. I don't think LeBron in any way intended to hit him. But I also think that if you're LeBron, you just talk to the media and say what happened. And, you know, if you the league, I don't know why you'd have to suspend him. The only ugliness of the incident was the fact that Isaiah Stewart wouldn't calm the hell down. Like, relax, dude. I know it's been a long year so far. It's not going to get shorter because you're probably going to be sitting at home watching your team play. Joe Bunizar famously started the Impact Academy, but how did he get to being one of the iconic workout coaches in the history of basketball? Let's find out.
Joe, there's a lot I want to get to, but if I were to call you the godfather of the individual development coach program, is that like a, I don't know, you tell me, because, and forgive me for over talking, but it is my pod. The change in basketball from when I was coming up to now is amazing. Like, I was very fortunate. I had my dad, who is my workout coach. But now, like, every kid has a workout coach, right? And I feel like, I'm sure there were other guys doing it, but you found a way to create a model that is now copied a million times over. Is there somebody that you copied it from, or are you the godfather?
I don't like to copy anything. Boy, you never like to call yourself the godfather of anything, right? I'm too young for that, Doug. I think I was one of the first guys to really package it into a business. Yes. I think that, you remember Tim Grover, who trained Michael Jordan, and Tim and I, you know, kind of came through, of course, Tim Gergovich, who is always an NBA coach, who, you know, Gerg, who's really focused on player development. But yeah, I mean, what you see as training and player development today, it's like, oh, it wasn't around when I started, and we found a way to package it. I mean, look, we started the basketball at IMG, which it wasn't even there at 2001. So yeah, I think that I'm definitely at the forefront of originating what people today, you know, we say now there's a train around every corner, right? And you know, as a basketball guy, some good, some not so good. You know, I think if you ask most parents of kids, their kid would have a trainer, right? So we, you know, it's the strength part, it's this part, it's, you know, so yeah, I mean, I think I was so lucky, as you know, to get such good NBA guys early that it was able to kind of blow up. So when you train a Kevin Garnett and he becomes the MVP, you become a good trainer. You know, people ask me all the time, how do you get to where you're at? I said, you got to get good players, right? But yeah, the concept of training, you know, we spoke briefly before we came on about your son. It's insane. You know, these kids are working out one day here, one day there. They got this trainer there, there's a trainer here. So yeah, I think it's been an awesome, you know, journey to see how the whole player development now, as you know, NBA staffs have, 10, 15 guys only in charge of development. You know, back when I started, there was zero. So yeah, I think it was a good start back in the late 90s, and we just kept it rolling.
Okay, so your coaching background, for people who don't know, prior to this, because you were a Division I coach, but your first coaching job, well, first as a player, what were you like?
High school player, average. Yeah, pretty average. I the only thing I wanted to do was coach college basketball. I read A Season on the Brink, Coach Knight's book, when I was 16 or 15 or whatever. I don't know why I read it. I don't know what it was, but I read the book and I said, I'm going to go to Indiana and I'm going to be a basketball coach. And, you know, I went, Lawrence Frank, who's at IU with me, we were both managers together. We both met at Five Star Camp. You know, you remember the good old Five Star days, even though you're a West Coaster, you know. And yeah,
My dad actually sent my brother, he did the, he did that one, and then he did the BABC camp as well.
Okay, yeah, sure, of course. Yeah. That Leo's camp out there in the East. Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, I went to IU to be, I was a manager. I didn't even know really what I was going to study or whatever. And I just
what year is this? Coach.
I got to IU in 1989. Okay. So class was Calbert Chaney, you know, Chris Reynolds, Alan Henderson, Damon Bailey was actually my roommate my junior season. So yeah, so we're right there.
Okay, so okay, now all of a sudden we start to salivate, and okay, so Damon Bailey, so you read Season on the Brink, which a good portion of the focus of Season on the Brink is about Damon Bailey, right? There's at least a portion there where Damon Bailey is coming in and he's the next, like, right? You had Alford, who is the guy, and then there's like, you think Alford's good? Wait till Bailey gets here. What was Damon Bailey like at Indiana?
Well, what was great about that too is Coach Knight was telling those guys, wait till you see this eighth grader. He was like telling them he's better than them right now, which is, you know, funny. Damon was, what a great guy, you know, man, Doug, what a great player, you know, athletic, very, you know, just skilled, athletic, strong, big and strong. And he was a man child in high school. You know, people don't remember that Damon's high school senior game. There was 45,000 people at the Hoosier Dome at the time, whatever it's called now.
I mean, that's RCA Dome. Well, now it's
whatever it's called. Yeah. But I'll tell you,
now it's convention center, a parking structure, right?
Because new dome is right. Right. And Damon was Hoosiers before Hoosiers. Right. So, you know, you drove into Bedford, North Lawrence, which was Damon was actually from Heltonville. And there was a huge sign that says, welcome to Heltonville, home of Damon Bailey. You know, and this kid was like 10th grade, right? So you can imagine that happening. He was great. He was, you know, and I think Damon got a little worn out with basketball after the eighth grade fame. So by the time he was a junior and senior, he just wanted to play. He was just a normal dude who wanted to play video games with his boys from Bedford. You know, it was like just a Southern Indiana, small town guy. But man, so talented and such a nice guy. Actually, my son is in college now, and he's actually at Notre Dame, which is why I'm here in Vegas. But he was playing and for the Pumps, which of course you know the Pumps. And we were in the gauntlet and we were playing Eric Gordon's team. And I looked down on the floor. I was assistant coach on the team. I said, man, that kid looks like Damon Bailey. I mean, this, you know, it was Indiana kid. And I looked
Damon's
up in the stands.
His son?
And his son, it was. I think Braxton is his name. Damon was sitting across from me in the stands. So, I mean, what a legend that guy was. I mean, he was, you know, people in Indiana still today will talk about what Damon Bailey was and really what great teams those were with Coach Knight, you know. So it was a lot of fun.
So what's interesting is you're there as a manager. You're living with a living legend, right? And honestly, and I'll tell you a book, and I'm sure you've read it, Playing for Knight. Alford's book was mm-hmm. incredible. That was the one that I actually like. I like Season on the Brink. It was obviously, you know, it's really well written and it's an incredible story. And they go on to win a national championship after it, right? But The Playing for Night was about Alford from Alford's perspective, and it also talked about his own workout routine, right? Where Steve would hang the net every tip of foot, the last shot, he'd leave every gym, he'd hang the net back when nets used to clip up on the rim, right? But right. he had a whole routine that he did it. What was, so you're as a manager, are you developing like workouts? Like how are you developing as a coach when you're working for Coach Knight?
Well, I think as at that time, I was way more focused on the coaching piece. So one of the kind of themes of my whole launch into the development world was, I think we spent a little too much time watching film of opponents and not enough time developing our own players as I was coaching, not only there, but when I went on to Wyoming after. So when I was a manager, I was like super, you know, we were cutting video all day. We were basically assistants. You know how managers are. They're the most valuable guy in the program, you know, sure. across the country. We were cutting video for all the assistants. We were doing game prep. I was really learning what, you know, being a coach is all about. And at Indiana, with all the film study and the detail that Coach Knight put in, I mean, there's no better classroom to learn. So we're spending a ton of time, you know, we had a film, and that was the old record and pause with the film. You know, there was no sports code, there was no software. It was, you put a VCR tape in the top and then you put a blank one in the bottom and you know, totally. You make a reel, right?
No, it was like high speed dubbing with mixtapes as well. Yeah. Only video was.
Yeah. I remember when Super VHS came out, we thought we were like in big time with technology. Yeah.
So instead of watching what other people do, watching yourself, I will tell you that, like, I remember, and speaking of Notre Dame, obviously played there my freshman year, and John McLeod was as an NBA guy, he was a big film guy. But I just felt like some films, like it was, you know, it was, we're watching we used to play 3-on-3 full court. He was a big 3-on-3 full court guy, which was great, but like your defensive rotations are completely different, right? And we do 3-on-3 full court, and then we would do a lot of half court, 5-on-5, 26 seconds on the clock, right? Because there's 35 second shot clock, 9 to get it across, whatever. And I just felt like the two didn't marry together. I really like, I like 3-on-3. I like 3-on-3-on-3. I like the, especially for younger kids, learning how to deal with the pressure of getting it past half court and understanding rotations. It's just fascinating to me on different ways of watching film. So you're preparing all this film, and are you pitching it to the coaches? Like, we should watch more of us? Or are you just listening and writing notes? Like, what is your own mental process of developing your coaching theories like?
Well, I was really always trying to find something that they didn't see, you know, as a young manager trying to figure out, okay, how do I get noticed here? You know, Coach Knight was so interesting because your first 2 years, you didn't even really know if he knew your name. You know, you just worked. It's a different world today because kids would quit. You know what I mean? Now if they, coach didn't, you know, it's a different expectation from young people. So we just worked. And I was looking at everything we did, you know, guys, Calbert Chaney's footwork, you know, missed screens, anything I could uncover, Doug, to find. And then, you know, the game prep there is so intense. You know, we had, if Iowa played 15 games, we needed all 15 of them. And if we had to drive to, knew what we had a guy in New Albany, Indiana named AJ. I forgot AJ's last name, who had a satellite dish, you know, really cutting edge. So he would get the games we couldn't get, you know, and then you would drive. Like we literally would go, we'd call someone to put a videotape on an airplane, drive to the airport, pick up the tape, because if Coach Knight didn't have all 15 games, we were in trouble, you know. So try telling him, hey, I only have 14. He would look at you and say, well, go get the 15th, right? So we were just cutting it up like crazy, you know. So I don't think we did enough of looking at it. We, you know, everything was, you know, I don't say everything was bad, but there was a lot of, you know, bad offense, bad defense, poor screening angle.
Negative. That's honestly, I mean, that's how I felt like coaches have coached, right? Which is find the mistake. Mm-hmm. Find the mistake. And so was your idea like, hey, let's, instead of always point out the mistake, let's find the positive.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely trying to find something. Hey, look, here's good offense from the other day. Let's show them this. You know, Coach Knight was just, of course, different because you're not going to go to him and say, hey, coach, I think I should do this. He would, you know, throw me out of the gym maybe the next day. But, you know, Dan Dockich was assistant at the time, Ron Felling, you know, all those guys were there. So we would go to coaches. I'd say, hey, can we do this? Can we do that? So the film breakdown was just, I never did a lot of like footwork stuff and things like that. If you watch the Indiana teams from those days, 89 to 93, which, you know, those were good teams. We had no plays and every guy catches the ball, squares up, triple threats. It's like, wow, we were really fundamentally sound. You know, footwork was good. Spacing was good. And we had zero plays. People don't believe me when I say that. We had no plays. It was all just motion. It was either pairs with two guys screening for each other or triangle with three guys in or what he called regular, which was just five man motion. Right. So we had no out of bounds plays, Doug. So yeah, we were trying.
I thought there was one. So here's the Fran McCaffrey obviously recruited me to Notre Dame, and he worked for Digger, and then he worked for McLeod, and he likes to tell the story that Digger was, I mean, he demanded of his assistants that same level of prep, right? You better watch every game, you know, better know every play, every tendency, whatever, right? Before the days of synergy. And the Indiana game was paramount to him, right? Indiana, Kentucky, like those are the games you got to, and UCLA. So the Indiana game was like the first game of the year. And Fran said he literally lost 15 pounds, like studying everything from the season before because they had nothing. You got nothing. And then you got like Zapruder footage on like the exhibition games before they played them.
Of course, yeah. So, we would send a spy into the arena like to shoot it with a camera, right?
Right. So I think, and I again, you were there. I wasn't. I only played against him once when I was at Notre Dame. But there was supposedly one inbounds play. Basically, it was just four across, and the guy in the weak side corner would come off of all the single screens, and they'd all just kind of read it.
Yeah,
and so Franny, you know, he's doing all this prep, and it's like you said, like, and my brother, he's installed motion here at Grand Canyon for the women, a little different style, with the big in the dunk or the ghost position, and kind of a four out dribble drive, reading off the dribble drive, right? That's what's changed in terms of motion offense. But anyway, he's a big proponent of motion because can't scout motion, right? And that's right. Why, and Fran has been an unbelievable offensive coach at Iowa. Why? Because they run motion and nobody runs motion. Everybody used to run it. And now like two or three teams run it of the elite teams. Anyway, so they're getting ready, and this is probably about the same time, getting ready to play Indiana. And, you know, sure enough, first inbounds play, there's some, you know, it's like, Calvert Cheney comes off the three singles and then the two big screen for each other. Some like minor twist. And it might not have been even a call, just like a read of, you know, how to play, just playing basketball off it. And, you know, Digger spins around and looks friend. What the fuck was that? I thought you watched every fucking film. What the fuck was that? Right. And he's like, what do you want me to do? They've had one play, one inbounds play. I watched the last 5 years of tape, but instead, you know, you're sitting there and his assistant coach, and you just got to go, I don't know, Digger, which is sweet. You know, they got to do that. It's like, I my friends that played in Arizona, they're like, we had three plays. Three, right? And there's a, Mike Montgomery likes to say simplicity and execution, right? Now, he had a million plays, but Bob Knight's down. What was it? What was he really like? Like, obviously, you read the stories where there's a violent temper. Now, my dad actually played with him or was a walk-on on his teams at Ohio State. And he's like, look, Bob Knight was always the same guy where he could be hard to be around, but incredibly engaging as well. And like charming, like there was, it's almost a little bipolar thing to it. What was he like when you're a young guy? Bob Knight's the biggest figure in the state of Indiana, maybe the biggest figure in all of college basketball coaching, right? He had won another national title. But what was he like on a daily basis watching him coach? What were those days like?
I mean, honestly, it's the foundation for how I approach what I do. I mean, intense is probably the biggest word I would use. Like that dude is like, I mean, Doug, there were times when he was walking down the hallway and I was walking down and I really contemplated like just going into a room because I didn't even want to walk next to him. Not that he would touch me, right? I didn't mean that. I just mean the energy from this guy
yeah.
is like, Like, I could tell someone, I joke with a lot of my NBA guys, I say, oh, Coach Knight. I say, yeah, look, if I told you, hey, he's going to walk up to you, he's going to look you in the eye, and he's going to just, you're going to be intimidated a little bit, but don't be, because he doesn't really mean it. They say, okay, I can handle it. They'd walk up to him, he'd look at him like, holy shit, I'm intimidated by this guy. He's just a massive figure. Like he said, it's not because of, but I'll tell you, his attention to detail, his intensity, his intensity wasn't able to be tempered, right? So it was like always intense, whether he was, we'd go eat at a restaurant and like, we would be nervous that the waitress wouldn't do like, would just really mess up. Not that he would belittle or anything like that, but he's just so intense. You know, he wants to, it's just very much his demand for perfection was scary. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, as a manager, if there was a smudge on the backboard, we would get nervous. You know what I mean? He's like, oh my God, someone who forgot to wipe the backboard. You know, like, so someone would scramble around and grab the rag and get, you know, try to, you know, get up there and get it done before Coach Knight's coming. So, you know, I remember vacuuming the locker room as a freshman. That's your job once a week. And I mean, like, I would literally comb the carpet to make sure there was no specks or anything on it. So the word is intense, detailed. I mean, but what I like about it, Doug, is he backed up his style with research. I mean, the guy's prepared. You know what I mean? It's one thing when dudes come in and they're just like all out of control and they're yelling at this guy. And, you know, guys are like, what is he talking about? He didn't watch the film. I mean, if he said something, he researched it. You know, he's so smart. Everything that he demanded from a basketball piece, he did himself. So he's the one watching film too. It wasn't like, you know, you guys all watch film and don't do this, don't do that. But he just knew. So you knew when you were doing something for Coach Knight that he was going to know what you were supposed to be doing. Like, he knows the right answer. So because he's not aloof to anything. So it was an amazing experience just in terms of how to run. Shoot, if I left basketball and gone into business, which of course many of his players and coaches have, it's just a lesson on, look, you have to, from top to bottom, intense. It was very intense. Now, was it some days I wanted to get the hell out of there because it was so intense? Yeah, like, get me out of here. You know, but I think it made my other times, you know, better. But he was incredible. Yeah, I mean, really, you know, there's a lot to Coach Knight. And yes, there's been some things, of course, over the years. But I mean, his preparation for the games and just his, like, he knew everything about me by the time I was done with there. I mean, you know how hard it is. I became, at 21 years old, I got a full-time assistant job at Wyoming. You don't do that without Coach Knight, you know. So this is a guy that, like, he's loyal to what he says he's going to do. But let me tell you, the ride is rocky along the way. It's not easy. You know, I mean, it's there were days when I was like, I don't know if I could take it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Could he exist in today's world? Like, and part of it is, it's a lot like Jordan couldn't shoot threes, so he wouldn't be the same. Like, look, do you not think Michael Jordan would evolve, you know, in 2000?
Yeah, he would learn, right? Threes, right?
But like, if yeah. Brooke Lopez can become a 3-point shooter, I'm pretty sure Michael Jordan can become a 3-point shooter, right?
Right.
But could Bob Knight evolve to 2021?
Oh boy. He's so true to who he was. Unless he evolved. Yeah, I don't think so. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, just what you see happening today of people talking about, you know, I guess, unsafe or not unsafe, but whatever, workplace issues and, you know, I'm trying to find the word, whatever, like a too intense workplace issue, verbal beratings, you know, things like that. I mean, if you worked for Coach Knight, if somebody, you know, said he didn't touch anyone or anything like that, but it was just constant mental strain, you know, of doing that. So I think in today's world, it would have been a topic of discussion. Could he have done it? He's smart enough, Doug. You know what I mean? The guy's a genius. So, I mean, it's not like he's not going to figure out how to do it. So the answer could be, he'd have to tone it down a little bit.
I also think, and again, you tell me if I'm wrong, because you lived it. I would tell you that he got into TV 15 years too late. Had he gotten into TV in 2000, like right when it ended at Indiana or a couple years before that, he might have been the greatest TV commentator ever. And I say that because at that point in time, he was so incredibly popular, right? And he was polarizing, but it was But he also, and I'm sure you experienced this, there was a charm to him. There's a humor to him, right? I mean, he would be messing with you and like you'd kind of get it. But I just like, look, he would never have the likability of Vital, but he could have been the Simon Cowell of college basketball. The problem was by the time it ended at Texas Tech, I don't think he loved it anymore, you know, and he was between the travel and trying to teach people things that he felt to be way below his level of acumen, like it was just too late. But I do think that if it was like late 90s, you know, I mean, he was an incredibly popular and engaging figure. I think the TV thing happened too late. And I think that because that's what people remember, what they saw last of him, and then the chair throwing always comes up, that there's a huge chunk of his career that is never discussed now among the all-time greats. And he's absolutely among the all-time greats.
No question. Yeah, the TV thing. Yeah, when he did that, it was like, yeah, his heart wasn't in that. You could tell. But you know, from his insight as a TV guy yourself, I mean, his insight into what he could do would be crazy, you know?
Well, I mean, it's like Majerus, like sitting next to Majerus was like, it was like a cheat code. Like, I think I know a lot about basketball. You're sitting, no, you know, what's going to happen here is, you know, and then like, holy shit, that just happened. Right. I mean, but Majerus, you know, again, kind of like those guys, didn't want to take cues. Here's my favorite Coach Knight TV story. Okay. So he quit mid year and his son took over. And so he comes up, he's at ESPN, and ESPN guys were doing backflips over him. And his like first night doing studio, West Virginia's playing, and they had Joe Alexander. And so, and Joe played great. And he's like,
I trained Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So he goes, you know, Joe Alexander's the best college basketball player I've seen this year, right? So, you know, I mean, we blow it up. We're at ESPN. We put it everywhere. Like, Joe Alexander, Coach Nice's best college basketball player. So I call Pat. I'm like, Pat, what is your dad doing? Like, I love Joe Alexander. He ain't the best fucking college basketball player, right? Like, he goes, did you actually hear what he said? I was like, he said he's the best college basketball player in the country. He's like, no, he said he's the best college basketball player he's seen. He's like, he didn't ever watch any fucking tape. He watched tape on our team. Okay. And he wasn't at this point in time, he wasn't watching anybody else. And he could only tell you from the, and then, you know, when you're coaching against people, there wasn't anybody who blew him away. And so literally Joe Alexander was the best college basketball player he had seen that year. It wasn't a lie. It was really what he thought.
Yeah, I believe that for sure. Yeah, coaches. One of my favorite stories with him is many, but we were getting ready to play Duke in the Final Four and we were going through the scouting report and he kept calling Christian Laettner Laettner. And finally, I walked over to one of the assistants. I said, surely he has to know what the guy's name is. I mean, you know, Christian Laettner was one of the top guys in the country, but just that he had to call him Laettner, you know, during the thing. I was like, who's Laettner?
That was the phone game, right? That was when he slammed down the phone.
That was that same tournament, right? Yeah.
Right. LSU and of course, his coaching against Krzyzewski was his point guard. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you? What are your memories of that game?
That whole tournament was in a magical run. You know, remember, Doug, those two teams, my last 2 years there, I think we lost six games or something total in 2 years. You know, we're number one in the country. Alan Henderson doesn't tear his ACL in my last year there. We lost to Kansas in the Final Eight, but that Duke Final Four game was, just the tension and the preparation for it. We had just beat the crap out of UCLA and the
four, that was like 40 points, right?
It was four, like, yeah, at least.
We had season tickets and I was like a partial bike ball boy to that team. That UCLA team was unbelievable. Tracy Murray and Don McLean, all time leading scorer at Pac-10 history, right? And yeah, Tracy Murray. Yeah. And I mean, they had like 12 pros on that team. And that game was at the Pit in New Mexico. Am I right?
Albuquerque. Yep. And we had just beaten Shaq and LSU, you know, the game before. So, you know, and I remember coach's preparation to this day for Shaq of flashing Matt Nover, who, you know, people know him as Ricky Rowe and Blue Chips, but Matt was a great player for coach. And he would flash Matt to the high post and he kept saying in the shoot around, Shaquille is not going to come out because they were sitting in a 2-3 zone. And Matt had like 20 you know, which is Matt averages like 8, right? So he was just, him and Alan Henderson were knocking down elbow jump shots all day long, right? So, yeah, I remember those games vividly. The Duke game was amazing. You know, I mean, the preparation was so intense. This tension was intense. Obviously, a new coach playing against Coach K was, you know, a big thing for him. And, you know, they had Hurley, they had Grant Hill, and they had a good team. And it was a hell of a game, but just fell a little bit short. And they went on to beat Michigan, you know, and that, I think that was the, I don't know, is that the game, whoever called the time? I don't remember which.
No. That was North Carolina. So that was in Minnesota. Yeah. That was in Minnesota. Yeah, yeah. Right. And the fourth team in the Final Four?
Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With Nick Van Exel and Corey Blunt and those guys.
No question. And Art Long, was that the guy's name?
I don't know if Art Long was on that team.
Not yet. Yeah.
He punched the police horse. That's what Art Long
I remember scouting for that game whenever. You know what? We played Cincinnati when I was at Wyoming, because Joby and Joby Wright and Huggins were buddies. So they came out. Huggins actually came to Laramie, which we couldn't believe he did that. And I remember saying to someone, don't mess with that guy. He punched a police horse. Yeah.
So imagine
what he'll do to you.
So you get done as a student, and then how did you join Joby? Did you go through Coach Knight? Was it Joby? Like how did it take place?
So Joby was an assistant at Indiana when I was a freshman, and I started helping him with his recruiting. And maybe back to what we were talking about before, that was back when we, you know, open up Tom Konchalski's report in the mail, and then we do all the different reports. Bob Gibbons, all the guys you remember real well. And I would start organizing them for Joby in a different way. So I was like creating new recruiting sheets. So he and I hit it off as when a coach finds a manager that does good stuff, they use the hell out of them. You know how that goes. So it's all day. So Joby and I got to know each other. He went to Miami of Ohio for my sophomore, junior, senior year. And then when I graduated, he got the job at Wyoming. So I remember the story. You know, what you do is you go into, you talk to Mary Ann, coach's secretary, and say, hey, I'd like to talk to Coach Knight. So, you know, you wait like a month to talk to so Mary Ann would call and say, hey, coach wants to talk to you now. So you go up to his office. We had like a little manager's office downstairs. You go up to the office and you're sitting there nervous as hell. And I said, hey, coach, you know, obviously I'm trying to get a coaching job after this, and I just want to know if I, you know, use you as a reference. And everybody'd say, yeah, you know, he just completely blew it off. Maybe 4 days before graduation, I had no idea what I was going to do. I ended up getting a degree in English literature because I liked it. I didn't want to teach. I figured it was a good base Coach Knight had thrown me out of practice a couple of times where I started to go register for the LSAT to see to go to law school. And I figured my coaching career was doomed. But I got a phone call maybe 4 or 5 days before graduation. It was like Monday or Tuesday from upstairs. And Mary Ann said, come upstairs. Coach Knight put me on the phone with Joby. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm looking for a job. And he said, I'd like for you to come out. And I said, well, I'd love to interview and have a chance to come out there. He goes, no, I want you to come out and work. So it was like a 10 second, I'm done. I got hired. I walked back downstairs. I said, that'd be great. I'm going to Wyoming. I'm from Detroit. I went to school in Indiana. I have no idea where the hell Laramie, Wyoming is or why I'm going there. But at the same time, I went home and I packed up my shit. And I skipped graduation and I moved to Laramie, Wyoming. So yeah, I'm a young guy for my age. So I just got
so you're,
and
so got you're 21. You're 21. How much are you making?
I was restricted earnings. Remember that? So it was 12,000 plus four. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 16 grand. Yeah.
16 grand. And home is where?
Well, I'm from Detroit, Farmington Hills, Michigan.
So you go home.
I'm sorry. I went home to Bloomington. I never went to Detroit. I just went to my place in Bloomington
to pack up my stuff. Yeah. Throw out your stuff. What kind of car?
So I have an interesting story that a manager from Kentucky gave me an idea to do a barnstorming tour when I was a senior. And so I approached Coach Knight with it or before the season, and he threw me out of the gym, told me never to come back. And then realized it was a pretty good idea. Called me back the next day and said, okay, here's what you're going to do. I don't want to hear a word about it until the season's over. If I do, you're out of here and it's over. And you can do it, but you're going to split the money 6 ways with the players, 4 players. And then myself and Marty Polio, who's his dad, Mike Polio, was the AD at, he was a head coach at Eastern Kentucky for a while. And then assistant AD at Louisville. So we organized a 9-game barnstorming tour after the season. And this will tell you about my car. So I went nuts with it. And, you know, that team was the all-time winningest team in Indiana history. So, we had Cal Bercheny. So first game is at Evansville at Roberts Stadium.
Where he's from, where Calbert's from.
Calbert's from. And, you know, I had like 300 t-shirts, two different styles. You know, I was a five-star guy, right? So I ran the canteen at five-star, which is even better because I knew how to make all the money from the stuff. So we sold, Doug, 9,000 seats for that first game in Roberts Stadium. And I walked out of there that night with a check for $85,000 in ticket sales, and we sold out every t-shirt. So I had autographed pictures of the guys, and we sold all those out. It was like 4 for $10 or 1 for whatever it was. I don't even remember. Right. So I walk in, and I remember my current wife's sister was helping me. She was my girlfriend at the time, sister, said, "Hey, can you come help me sell these t-shirts?" And she rides in the car with me to Evansville. No change, like, to give anyone, no place to put the money. I was like stuffing money into my briefcase. Long story short, we played 9 games and we made almost $250,000 in 9 games that we all split. So I had a car, had a new Ford Explorer.
paid for in small bills.
Absolutely. I used to meet the guys, right? So I was so worried that Calbert wouldn't show up for the next game. Chris Reynolds and all those guys are, go ahead.
So, okay. So you got a brand new car. You packed
a brand new car.
Brand new drag. I take it you drove to Laramie.
No. I think I shipped the car to Laramie. I don't remember what I did. I flew and then shipped it. Yeah. At the time. Yeah.
Why don't you drive?
I don't know what I was doing at the time, but I had that car. I definitely had that Explorer. Yeah.
So, Laramie, Wyoming in the early 90s.
Yeah. 93. Yep.
Describe.
Oh boy. Yeah. I was, coming from Michigan and in Indiana, it was the
only thing anybody knew about Wyoming basketball was Fennis Dembo.
Fennis Dembo. Yeah.
That's people all. Used, it, that's all
it. Even Kenny to this Sailors, day, say, I know. Did you coach Fennis Dembo? Yeah.
I know Kenny Sailors. They say invented the jump shot, right? Yeah. Kenny
I remember Sailors, the picture.
Fennis Dembo. Oh. And other than that, what was 93 Laramie, Wyoming like for a kid from Detroit via Bloomington?
It was tough. Yeah. I mean, thank God I love basketball. The people were super nice, super duper nice. So, yeah, I was like, I had no issue with that. I mean, Laramie is the university is the city, right? So put it this way, about 6 months after, I had a place, a friend of mine, Greg Smith, who owned the two restaurants in town. That's it. And every day I would go there for dinner. He'd have my dinner like ready for me at the bar. So that was it. And 6 months after I got there, I was out on a ranch helping brand cattle. And I was like,
no.
What am I doing? Yeah. So funny story. I remember the old white K-Swiss shoes that were like the real nice white ones. Yeah. I showed up to brand cattle and K-Swiss shoes. They were like, those aren't going to work. Yeah. So it was cool. I mean, look, I was so excited. You know how young coaches are. I didn't give a shit where I was. You know, I was like, I just want to work. But it was cool. I actually got married shortly after that. So I dragged my wife to Laramie, Wyoming with an MBA degree. And she actually worked for the Wyoming Technical Institute, which is an automotive school. There's not that many jobs in town. So she bit the bullet with me. But look, we drive down to Fort Collins on the weekends. We went, to Boulder. We made the most of it, but it was great. I mean, we had the largest crowd in school history my second year there against BYU, when they had some of those good teams. We had a good team. We had Theo Ratliff, right? So that was, we inherited Theo, which helped us out.
He's like the original rim protector. And I mean, there's a guy whose game would translate incredibly well now. And obviously with the Sixers, they went to the NBA finals with him. What was Theo like? And so is Joby running motion? How is he coaching?
Yeah. Same exact thing. So we tried. The only thing is we realized, and I realize now, that you can't run motion without players like Indiana, so we had to start re-recruiting players. Yeah. We had a bad motion group. We put in Doug entries, right? Which were like quick hitters off the motion and it would go into motion. So we had to put in entries, and we did have out of bounds plays, because if we'd had no out of bounds plays with our guys, we would have been maybe scoring in the wrong basket. So, it would have been a little bit of chaos, but we Theo was amazing. When we had him for 2 years and our defense was like top 5 in the country. And, we thought it was our coaching. And then when he left, we went to like 300th in the country. Yeah, because he was, and Theo would have learned to shoot threes today for sure. And if Theo would have made threes, he would have played, he played a long time anyways. But We ran motion. We tried to run it, but we had to make some adjustments on that. And then we had to retool our recruiting. And, you know, really it's, you know, getting a guy recruiting to Laramie. So after my second year there, both the other assistants left. So I got promoted to recruit after two seasons. So I'm 23. I'm on the road. It's not easy recruiting kids to Laramie. You know, it's just a difficult, you know, we were planting people on the corner of the street. Oh, you go stand there. And then we drive into town and wave, said, oh yeah, there's the track team. And there's, you know, we didn't even, you had to pull out some smoke and mirrors, but the people were really great. And the fan support is obviously very good up there when you're winning.
Plus you're playing at altitude, right?
At 7,200, you know, people think Denver's high. It's 2000 feet higher than Denver. Right.
Have you seen what they, you know, they redid the arena. It is really nice.
Oh yeah. I haven't been in there for a while.
They did a really good job. Changed it. So it's not the old roundhouse like it was, right? Okay. They adjusted the seats and it's like a true basketball arena. It's kind of spectacular. It's really good what they've done. They just got to get it going again because that is an incredible fan base when they're good, right? You got the guy in the barrel.
I mean, honestly, I hate to say it, but they don't really have any. I mean, if the Pokes, as they call them, are winning, they're going to the game.
No question.
And, you know, you'll get people drive from Gillette, which is like 5 hours. I mean, it doesn't matter where. It's the only show in town, the only show in the state.
Yeah. So what happened?
We were there 4 years. My second and third year, we had really good years. And then Paul Roach, who was John Madden's offensive coordinator, was the AD. He was a friend of Buzz Kerpius, who is the academic advisor who you might remember from the Season on the Brink books at IU. So that's how the Joby connection came. We got a new AD my fourth year there, and that was it. You know, he just didn't groove with Joby, and we were 500, you know, we weren't really turning it over. And, you know, we got fired after that, after my fourth season at Wyoming.
So that was, how did it come to be that you kind of went in your own thing? You didn't keep, you know, show up at the convention or go with another night guy, right? You know, or go with Dockage, whatever. How did it come to be that you did your own thing?
I was going to go with Dan to Bowling Green, right? Dan was at Bowling Green and we had talked about it. And he made a statement to me one day. He said, you know, you can come to Bowling Green, but let me ask you a question. You know, he'd known me since I was a kid, since I got to IU. And I said, what? He said, you really want to be an assistant at Bowling Green? And I said, not really. You know, so anyways, I went back to, so Andy Miller, who's, you know, the agent Andy Miller, so Andy grew up with Lawrence Frank. Lawrence Frank and I went to college together. So during college, Andy would come stay with us at IU. So I've known him since I was 19 years old. So he called me and said, hey, in between coaching jobs, you want to work some guys out? And I said, well, I guess, I don't know. Because, you know, you get fired in March and you get paid through whatever, the end of the summer. And then, you know, that next couple months is where you decide what you want to do. So I wasn't going to go with Dan. I started thinking maybe I don't want to. So Andy said, hey, let's do this. So right away, I said, sure, whatever, I'll do it. And I had always had a background in strength and conditioning and nutrition. So I'm, you know, not only myself stay in shape and am into it, but I've studied it. I had my CSCS, you know, certified strength and conditioning coach stuff. So they just started sending me. So the first trip I took was to the University of Nebraska. I said, sure, I'll do it, Andy. He goes, all right, we need you to go to Nebraska. There's this kid, Teron Liu, who we're going to sign, and we need to get him on a nutrition plan. We need to get him started working out. He's going to leave school. So I said, okay. So I get on a plane to Lincoln, Nebraska. No idea what I'm doing. You know, I remember like packing like Myoplex EAS shakes, you know, remember the old shakes? Yeah. And I just went and I started training Ty, and I didn't even really know what training was, you know, because in college basketball, even today, you know, we have 50 guys every year, 40 that are preparing for the draft. And many of them will tell us we've never done workouts like that before, you know, because most of the stuff in college, it's getting better, but a lot of it is more team oriented. And, you know, you're coming off curls and you're, you know, you're doing stuff you're going to do in the offense. Whereas, you know, what we're doing is we're expanding guys' games. So I had to learn a lot, but yeah, I started training Ty. And then the guy Andy was working for, Eric Fleischer, sent me out to New York. And I did a camp for Stephon Marbury. And at the camp was 18-year-old Al Harrington. And I started training Al. And so maybe 2 weeks later, Andy called me back. He said, hey, I had moved back to Bloomington because I said, okay, while I'm in transit here, I want to go back where I wasn't excited to stay in Laramie. But I went back to Bloomington. And the next thing I knew, they said, we're going to send you Teron and Al to train him for the draft. And so this was in, after my year there, I said, cool, send them. So, I mean, they stayed, both of those guys lived in my basement for a long time, you know, and I didn't have a facility. So I used the IU facilities. I was using the rec center there, the Hyper building. Coach Knight let me use Assembly Hall sometimes. And I just started training him, and I just started spending all day with him. And I just started, you know, Charles Jones. You remember Charles, the scorer from Long Island University?
Of course.
I think he led them there. Yeah. So these, said,
all, by the way, these are all Tyronn Lue crossed me up when they beat us at our place. Like I, these oh, are all your, Charles Jones.
All your competitors. Right. Right.
Yeah. These
right.
are, these, this is my, the, all these are all names. I'm like, yep.
Yep. Yeah. You know, yep. all those guys. Yeah. So they just came to Bloomington, and I had a little training business in Bloomington, and I started working them out, and I would just spend my whole day with them. I'd lift them. I'd teach them how to eat. I'd take them to the grocery store. I was cooking for them in my kitchen. My wife was like, who are all these people living in my house? I said, deal with it right now. And then what I did, Doug, is I said, you know, I had my camp background. I said, why don't I run? I told Eric Fleischer, I said, you know, he had KG, he had Chauncey, a bunch of other guys that he had. I said, why don't I run their summer camps? Like I can run their camps. I can make these guys some money. So I made a little business where I was training them, but then supplementing my income with, because no one knew what to charge training. I mean, it wasn't the same. So I was running their summer camp. So that's what I did. I just said, shit, you know what? I kind of like this. I ran the Kevin Garnett fan club, right? So all of his fan mail would come to my condo in Bloomington, boxes and boxes and boxes. And I would stay up all night and I would enter all the names into a label sheet. Remember, like on a word processor, it wasn't like today. And I would print out the labels and I made up this page that said, you know, Kevin Garnett fan club, 1999, autographed picture, newsletter, blah, blah, blah. And I would mail them all back. So every night I would just do as much as I could till I fell asleep. I started going to my mailbox and just opening up the mailbox. There was just like 30 envelopes, 40 envelopes, just $20, $20, $20. I was like, what is going on? So I just did it. I just started doing that. I said, you know what? I'm going to stay away from coaching for a little bit and see if I can give this thing a run. I love the training piece of it because I just love spending the time with the guys. And I loved, you know, pushing them every day. So yeah,
I don't want to, like, I know it, again, it's like your business, but what's the process of it? I'm fascinated by, for example, eating. Okay. So I grew up in Southern California, and Marv Murnovich was like the guru. Uh-huh. Right? So, and lots of people had mixed feelings about Marv because, those of us who loved and got to know Marv, like, he was awesome, but he's not for everybody. And I'm not sure if there's an Asperger's, there's something socially that was a little different, but, he was the first one to tell me, like, okay, you need to read this book about the zone diet. Okay. And you need to understand that, like, basically everything you're taught in school about nutrition is wrong. And complex carbohydrates are like eating candy bars, right? And this is what you need to do. And with this, and if you want to do it, if you want to make it. And I will tell you unequivocally, the change in my body, changing my diet, was earth shattering. Okay. But I was looked at like I was Looney Tunes at the time, right? This, you know, you're eating nuts and avocados, right? You're like, monounsaturated fats nobody thought about. So he was way ahead of his time. He also, and I my first basketball injury ever was 4.5 months ago. I tore my ACL. And what he had taught me then, and I'm experienced now, is like a lot of what he did, balance, bands, Pilates stuff, was all things that he took from rehab. Because the idea was, like, when you rehab that whole body, that whole area. But then when people train, they train, you know, the bigger muscles. And he was like, this doesn't make any sense. You have to train the whole body to kind of work together as one. And so many of the things, the balance things that people have done now over the last 15 years, 25 years ago, he was the one doing it using Russian techniques as well. And again, we were seen as Looney Tunes. So this is late 90s. And you're training guys and you have a background in nutrition. Are you still a high carb guy? Did you go to proteins? Like, what was your approach for diet going back then?
Barry Sears, The Zone, was my first book that we went through, which you just said. We put the guys, we explained to them how your fat intake will open up the passages to burn energy, make your body more efficient. So Marv's a little bit ahead of me, but very similar to what you're saying. We changed the way they were eating based on that zone diet. And I don't know that, I think I maybe over the years have kind of like tweaked it a little bit from
sure, of course,
as more stuff came out. But that was the first, I used to pull quotes from that book and give it to the guys, you know, and really, And that was like the charts in that book we used it to go on. So it made a huge, as you know, Doug, I'm like, these guys, like, they don't want to eat good. But then as soon as they do and they feel so good, they're like, oh, I'll do that, you know, because they just feel so good. So we took a very zone diet approach to what we were doing with all my players. And I was able to put them in we were making it in my house. We were ordering stuff. I had restaurants that were making it for him. So we really control those, you know, we only have five guys or four guys. It's easy to do. But yeah, very much so. We changed the way they ate.
Here's it going. So my dad, so Marv was like, Bob, he needs to have egg whites in his shake every morning. So I'll never forget, like I got up probably the first month that I was trying this. My mom or dad would cook eggs and then take the yolk out. And then at some point I was telling him, like, you know, I drink it for, I don't care. I actually like the taste of protein powder and whatever, but like the egg white, the thickness of, he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, you know, after you cook the egg white, you take the yolk out. He's like, no. You know, you just raw. Crack the egg raw. Like, oh my God. I felt like
it's pretty gross, actually, to think about what you're saying. You put the cooked disgusting. Egg white in the shake. Yeah.
I'm like, look, I'll eat anything, but Jesus, cooked egg white in a milkshake was not good. Was not good. So I do understand. Like, I can totally kind of picture this. Okay. So, yeah, the zone thing was amazing.
Yeah. That was a great, great revelation, I think. That book was a big one.
Well, I think it changed sports, really. I mean, it just did. Because if you remember, like, when you're in college or early on when you're coaching, you go night before a game and dudes are carb loading. Everybody carb loading.
Yeah.
Just pasta.
Yeah.
And I get to Notre Dame and it's just like pasta's like, coach, I don't eat pasta. Is it a diet? Is it a Jewish thing? It's like, no, coach. I was trying to explain to John McLeod, like, coach, that's like eating a candy bar. Would you want me eating candy bars the night before a game? He's like, what are you talking about? This is what marathon runners are. I was like, coach, it's the wrong thing for you. Your glycemic index spikes up, right? And then you come down just like a sugar low. Like you need, we need quality fats, coach. We need salads. We need avocados. I need chicken breasts. So like the only way I could do it on the road with Notre Dame was I would eat chicken breasts. Usually, and you know, I'd eat eggs, but they had like full eggs. I wanted egg whites, whatever. Like, I was the biggest pain in the ass ever because I'm just sitting here going like, no, this is wrong. And then I get to, and then we just get lifting. And so I finished high school. I was 19 because I stayed back. So I'm 19 years old and I get to Notre Dame and I'm 160 pounds, but I've been training with Marv. And so I'm flying around. And the strength coaches basically used the football strength program.
Sure.
And this is 95, right? This is when creatine first came on the market. Mm-hmm. So they're like giving us Gator Load and creatine. And they're giving us Gator Load because my body fat was below, with the calipers, was below 4%. And they were like worried about cramping. So you had to pound Gator Loads, whatever. And I'm telling you, I was so, that and I know it's not real muscle weight with the creatine, but I was just jacked. So I arrived Notre Dame in August, 160 pounds, played our first game in November. I'm 177 pounds.
Wow. Right?
And I mean, I'm freaking diesel, but I'm not moving as well. Right. I'm not shoot. I can't shoot. Cause I'm so, I got to where I love the weight room, but like too much. And, okay. So then with your training, with the weight training, where's that background come from? Because as you said, like, though you studied it, you also are an English lit major. So you're working out Ty Lue and Al Harrington, but you're lifting with them. How'd you get to what you wanted to work on with their bodies?
Well, I became a fitness freak myself. So I used to come, I taught step aerobics when the Reebok step first came out. I was one of the first guys to do spinning classes. I had Ty and those guys on bikes before spinning was spinning. I came out to LA and worked with Billy Blanks with Tybo for a long time, with his daughter, Shelly. And, it was just really a fitness craze for me. You know, I'm a triathlete now, so I've done 20 Ironmans and I continue to do them. And, I'm just into it. I've always been into it personally. So what I was doing is I was kind of experimenting on myself as a young trainer and then taking it to them. But you know, like the Taibo movements, as corny as it might sound, I mean, those kind of, that's what you're talking. It's body control, it's core strength, it's your hips. People talk about, oh, his hips are tight, his glutes are weak. Well, we knew that before. I was having these guys like on the Reebok step, because I knew from doing class, when you do like knee up 10 times, 20, 30 times, your butt starts burning, right? And it's just that different kind of burn. So we were doing, you know, even to this day, different guy, like Kyle Lowry does mostly Pilates. You know, he doesn't even do a ton of weightlifting because, you know, his body size and his type. So back then I felt like I was way ahead of the game, like saying, okay, we're going to do isometric holds. I had these guys working on their balance. I had them, you know, even in the Reebok, like the classes with the music, you get a little rhythm, you know, you get a little rhythm. It's movement patterns, you know? So we were Arnie Kander, who, I don't know if you know Arnie, who was with the Pistons for such a long time. He's their physical therapist who was with them throughout all the years. And now he's independent in Colorado. But I mean, maybe Arnie was with Detroit, maybe 25 years throughout the great days. He was the first guy that I ever studied under and learned from that was all about movement patterns, like really about movement. Even for me as a runner, when I had issues, he would get me in and like do these strange exercises where I was just kind of moving my arms and getting my body. Like, what am I doing? He's like, you know, you're finding your center of gravity and you're engaging your muscles. And so we got away from all that pumping iron, you know, early. And I'll tell you, we switched to the Kaiser machines early because they're air powered. Right. And guys didn't like it. A lot of guys didn't like it because they want to go drive iron. You know, they don't feel like they're doing anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, so from the late 90s, I was much with Marv. You know, we were doing single leg holds. We were doing, you know, a lot of work on unstable platforms to get the stabilizer muscles firing. And again, I did it all with the guys, right? So I was doing the workouts with them and I was feeling my body get different ways and then doing additional studying. So we got, some guys do need to put on strength, right? I mean, that's just a part of it, but there's other guys and you have to combine it with, if you look at basketball today, especially or even in the night, it's all about speed and movement now, right? So you got guys like, I'm watching some of the rookies in the NBA. I mean, they're so skinny, but they're getting there because they can get to where they need to go. And there's not a lot of bumping and all that kind of stuff. So it's really very much on the same, I'm on the same page and always have been with that whole body control. You know, I wanted to train my guys like dancers. You know, that was what I would tell them all the time. You know, remember Willie Gault, the wide receiver, did ballet, right? For the first time we were doing yoga. You know, I had Chauncey Billups doing yoga in 2002 or one or two, you know, now it's like, oh, he does yoga or he does, you know, it's like we were doing that stuff all before.
I did yoga. I first started doing yoga when I was at ESPN. I did a campaign with P90X and they had the 90 minute yoga and I would do it like on, I had little, my kids were really little at the time and I would do it in the basement. Like on a Friday night, I would go to everybody go to sleep and I go and do the yoga. And I was like, God, why didn't I do this when I was a basketball player? Like this is
for sure. Yeah.
My whole every muscle is firing every single one.
Big right? time. It's all about change of speed.
And yet there's no impact. Right? It's
nothing.
Like, I was blown away by it.
All right, that's the end of part one. The Doug Gottlieb Show, by the way, is daily 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on your iHeartRadio app, Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com. You can also check us out on Sirius XM 217 and 203. Stay tuned for part two. We'll probably take a day in between and then we'll drop it. And that's more how he formulated moving to Vegas, starting his own thing, what some of the discussions about diet are in terms of diet and exercise and where did his knowledge come from? You'll love it. That's for next time. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.